The Guardian.
Football Weekly is sponsored by Squarespace. Make your next move and create your next website using Squarespace's all-in-one platform. Head to squarespace.com and enter the offer code Football Weekly to get 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain.
Football Weekly, busier than the man who hires planes to Arsenal fans and also likely to fly by. Today, we bring you Man City Liverpool, the big balls ups of a fast, furious and frustrating affair. Pausing only to ask if the cojones of Stones counts as nominative determinism. We salute the two sides, plus another win for Chelsea, Spurs without Kane and West Brom. While rival planes dogfight in the skies above the Hawthorns, Baggies curiously uncontested in the air in victory over the Gunners. All that, plus European quarterfinal draws and a special championship roundup in this Football Weekly. Raw, among the special things about today's pod, it's a valedictory appearance from QPR loving Michael Hann.
Hello, James. I'm sending Football Weekly listeners into paroxysms of joy by departing the Guardian.
I don't think that's true. Where are you? Wait, first let me say hi, Barry, and welcome back.
Hi. Hello.
You're not leaving the Guardian, are you? Just to quash that rumour.
Not that I'm aware of. I heard this rumour for the first time about 5 minutes ago. So it's news to me.
Right.
But if this does turn out to be my valedictory podcast,
yeah,
well, we better put in a good shift.
Absolutely. Well, I think that's a good maxim to podcast by.
Treat every podcast like it's your last.
Absolutely. Except for you, Ian. You'll always be here.
Oh, God bless
you. Ian McIntosh, everybody.
Hello.
Ooh, William Hughes writes in, could Michael Hann pretend to like football a little bit today, please? All right. What do you think, Michael?
Ooh.
Yeah. Let's start with a game that everybody liked.
I like the notion that correspondent thinks someone who has a season ticket at QPR might not like football.
Right. Well,
I'm not sure where he's coming from.
Yeah.
I don't just have a season ticket at QPR. I go and watch non-league football, and when friends have spare tickets for other games, I go to them. I watch quite a lot of football, which is one reason why I have such contempt for it, I think.
Right. Okay. Did you watch Man City Liverpool, Michael?
I had Manchester City versus Liverpool on.
I'll take that as a yes. Okay. It's been widely hailed as the game of this and perhaps any season, despite being, to all intents and purposes, an error-strewn 1-1 draw between two sides who are pretty good but not quite good enough to challenge for the title. What was your take?
It was quite fun, but I'm slightly baffled by the eulogies towards it. I was slightly baffled when at the end of the game the Sky commentator said that everyone would have loved that game and that the two managers would have thought it was a fantastic game. To be honest, I think at the level of Pep Guardiola and Jurgen Klopp, they are not going to the games and hoping for nothing more than some entertainment and maybe a few goal-mouth mix-ups. I think that's exactly what they don't want.
But right. Yeah, well, but Pep, by contrast, saluting this as the proudest day of his life, I think, didn't he, after the game?
Which is kind of an odd thing to say when you draw at home to a perennially upper mid-table club.
One that hasn't won away from home in the league since the turn of the year as well.
Yeah. One that, in recent history at least, has only been in the Champions League once in 7 years. I would have thought that he's got a few things in his back catalogue.
So why do you think he said that, Ian?
Well, in fairness, it was the sort of performance they needed. There was there was defiance in there and a bit of fire and a bit of an attacking intent. They didn't look like a team who had lost faith in their manager. They didn't look like a team that was irreparably damaged by what happened in midweek. It was a good sort of cathartic performance, and yeah, it was a lot of fun, but it was also the kind of game for both teams, kind of emblematic of where English football is at the moment. Hideous misses and poor defending.
As Barney Roney put it, another Premier League game where everyone runs around bumping into each other, then a celebrity manager makes wry, embittered remarks at the end. Barry?
Yeah, I too am slightly baffled by the praise this game. It was entertaining. We saw the best of both teams. We saw the worst of both teams. But maybe it's been eulogised to this extent on the back of much of the dross we're subjected to on a regular basis, so that anything that is a little bit more entertaining and fun. And the two managers seem to clearly enjoy themselves, and I don't think anyone left the Etihad thinking they hadn't been entertained. I was a little bit puzzled. But compare it to the game that was on earlier in the day, Manchester United, Middlesbrough, which was just awful.
Was it awful?
I thought so.
You had a goal from Jesse Lingard there. You had a goal from Borough as well.
Well, that was remarkable.
Okay, I must admit, I didn't catch the Borough-Man United clash.
It didn't do much for me, I have to say.
Did it not? Michael?
But there's also the need to flam up other games down the division to distract from the attack, from the fact that the Premier League is dead this season and has been dead for a long time because Chelsea are walking away with it and nothing's going to change that. So you need to... Those who have an interest in promoting the Premier League need to convince us that what's happening further down between teams who are this season irrelevant remains relevant and exciting.
Right. Oh, in fairness, this season was always going to be difficult second album after Leicester winning the title last year. It's always going to be quite tough to top that. And there has been some entertainment further down.
I think there's been some entertainment all over.
You sound like you're talking about Glastonbury. Well, the top of the bill's not that good. But if you go to the Park stage on the Friday afternoon, there's great stuff there.
Right. Speaking of Glastonbury... headlining next year on the Sunday, Michael.
Ed Sheeran.
are you saying, Michael, drawing attention to the fact that I'm ginger and trying to make some link between me and Ed Sheeran?
No, I was just wondering what your take on that was, with your knowledge of Ed Sheeran, with your knowledge of the institution of Glastonbury.
My close personal friendship with Ed Sheeran, because we're both ginger.
Yeah. Were you taken aback by that?
No, he's the biggest selling musician in the world this year.
Right, okay.
Not in the least surprising.
All right, then. Guardiola also said John Stones has more personality than everybody else in this room, and then he made a remark about his testicles.
Which confused me. He's got more balls than anyone in this room. Right. Is that on a singular level that he's got three?
Literally.
Or is it, you know, on a collective level that it numbers into the hundreds?
I don't know.
Which would explain why he dropped so many bollocks.
I think it was anyone in this room, not everyone in this room, wasn't it?
Together.
So that's the crucial thing. He had more balls than the total number of balls in the room.
Right. How many balls has David Silva got?
I've not investigated closely recently.
But I mean, in a kind of metaphorical sense, how wow were you? Because this was another game where Didi Hammond...
It would depend on whether or not he has a snooker table.
All right. But again, kind of metaphorically, using that as a segue into how well did he do? Because he's been a hot topic, and I'm not sure if you guys have been able to catch up on recent Football Weeklies, but I made the mistake of eulogising Bernardo Silva over David Silva and caught Ross... From the legion of Silverites out there who...
Well, I'm a Silverite. I thought he played very well yesterday. Right. I mean, we are doing the game down, but make no mistake, it was an entertaining game, and the speed of some of the attacking from both sides was phenomenal. No ponderousness there at all. And Silva for Manchester City was, as usual, sort of pulling the strings. I thought he was top drawer.
Could have sparked two penalties, basically. No, the chance where Sterling went down, which he fizzed the ball across early on, and then that dink over the top for I can't remember who late on. Oh, Sterling again, right? Which probably should have both been penalties. Do you think? Are you not convinced?
No, I'm not. I'm not completely convinced. Okay. I don't think any of them.
One of them?
Were Stonewall.
None.
And not even the Liverpool one, the Mane one. I don't think there was much in that either.
Really?
I thought all three should have been penalties, but there you go.
Referees. Very.
What was the point you wanted to make, though, Ian?
The point I wanted to make was going back to testicular fortitude.
Oh yeah, cool.
In which Raheem Sterling over the course of the entire season, and again, particularly against his old club, I think he's been fantastic. He's really come on. And he looks brave, and he looks like what he went through in the summer and the, at times, baffling tone of criticism he gets in certain newspapers has
racist
brought him...
criticism, in my opinion.
Quite possibly, yeah. They certainly seem to have problems with the way young men of colour spend money. But that's another story. He now looks as a person as if he's reached a point where he's almost immune to criticism. It doesn't have the effect on him because he's been through so much.
Right. Still runs funny, though.
He does run funny, but he plays very well. And as I say, in terms of balls, I think he has many.
Bingo. All right, then. In a festival of bad finishing, we should also salute James Milner, who took his penalty extremely well amidst a barrage of whistles. Philippe Auclair on Twitter says, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that Milner hasn't missed a single penalty kick since the 7th of November 2009. Jeepers, that's a long time. Should have checked that before I came in, shouldn't I? Is Philippe wrong? Listeners, that's the question. If he's not, that's a remarkable statistic.
Philippe's never wrong.
He was wrong about Dimitri Payet leaving West Ham and going back to France. He's got that spectacular.
And we're not going to let him forget it.
Oh, never.
Never.
Just
Michael.
One thought, not about Philippe Auclair, but about terrible finishing in that game.
Mm.
Adam Lallana's terrible miss. And I found myself wondering if that will be remembered in the same way as Ronnie Rosenthal's. Because Ronnie Rosenthal's miss was worse, but of course we saw less football then. So when you see a miss like that, it sticks in the mind. And people still remember the Ronnie Rosenthal miss now. What is it, 25 years, best part of the way. And I suspect we won't remember Adam Lallana's miss in the same way, even though it was worse, simply because we see so many more misses now.
Is it also because it didn't ultimately matter, as you hinted before, whether Liverpool or Man City won this game? I mean, it has a bearing on who finishes in the top four, I grant you.
People don't remember Ronnie Rosenthal's miss because it had implications for the season. They remember it because he went round the keeper and booted it over.
But Lallana didn't do that.
No, Lallana had a side foot in from 3 yards and didn't make any contact at all. Didn't even boot it over. Or he made the very slightest of contact. But you could see how important he thought the miss was from his reaction, which was that wonderful sight of a football player plunging to their knees with their head in their hands, more or less banging his head against the ground, like going, "Mummy, no, 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 mummy."
Yeah.
But rather... ironically, you have misremembered Ronnie Rosenthal's miss because he didn't boot it over.
Did he hit the bar? Yeah. Sorry. He booted it over the target area back and hit the bar.
It's true.
And my favourite bit of the Lallana miss was that Roberto Firmino was so convinced he'd score, he'd done his celebratory knee slide. Sort of celebrating with the Liverpool fans behind the goal while his teammate was beating his head off the ground.
What does it mean for the top four? We'll be discussing that after this.
Create a beautiful website or online store with an award-winning template from Squarespace. Head to squarespace.com and enter the offer code FOOTBALLWEEKLY to get 10% off your first purchase. Squarespace, make your next move, make your next website.
That's right, everyone. Back with more Football Weekly now. How far are Arsenal now off the top four then, Ian, with your league table there?
They are 6 points off fourth place Liverpool. They do have 2 games in hand on Liverpool, but given the form they're in, I don't think that really counts for much.
Form, like the one that they showed or didn't away at West Brom. Well, first of all, West Brom, everyone's being very rude about them. People busting out those statistics about when Tony Pulis' teams get to 40 points. Going into this weekend, it was 30 games and his sides had only won 3 of them. But they certainly won this one. My word, they awoke, didn't they, with a roar.
Yeah, and let's, before we get down to dissecting Arsenal, West Brom were brilliant. Really good structure, really good shape. Worked their set pieces brilliantly. I suspect Tony Pulis may have been... handed clippings of a couple of those articles this week because there was a little bit more fire than there'd been in the side in their last 2 games, both of which they'd lost. And they were absolutely well worth their win.
West Brom players, they say that he tried a new tactic this week. He was nice to them.
What?
He called them in on the Monday and they thought they were going to get, you know, a right old talking to, possibly while Tony was dressed in a towel or something. And instead he said, "Come on, lads, we've got 10 games to go. Let's go out there and enjoy ourselves."
Well, they certainly
possibly
did
adding the words runabout a bit. I don't know. But they did. They had 23% possession. And yet, 8 shots on target. Arsenal didn't manage a single shot on target after the first half hour of the game. And that's with 77% possession.
Yeah.
Plus, this business about West Brom from set pieces, who knew?
It couldn't have been predicted that a Tony Pulis side would be strong from corners. I mean, I don't think you can blame Arsene Wenger for that at all. But yeah, watching Match of the Day, it's one of those, you don't need the analysis for this. You don't need anyone talking to you to show you a corner where there are 5 West Brom players unmarked, 6 yards out in the middle of the goal.
Right, and the Arsenal player saying, "After you." Really? I mean, Aaron Ramsey stepping out of the way of Dawson for the first.
Well, several of his teammates all rushed to the near post where there really wasn't anything to worry
Bellerin
about.
Well, Hector Bellerin retreated backwards beyond the back post.
That was remarkable. Meanwhile... Is it a bird? Is it a plane? No, it's Arsenal fans... Rocketman 66 says, "Any team ever had a similar 1-to-1 ratio of aircraft towing banners to shots on target?"
It would have been quite interesting. I presume it was the same aircraft double jobbing and getting paid for 2 trips around.
Shocking, that really is.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty imbecilic, but I saw Arsblog made some disparaging remarks about the people who had hired both planes on Twitter, and he was rounded on by many people who say, well, we have the right to make our voice heard and whatever. So,
yeah, but we have the right to think they're numpties as well, in a diplomatic sense.
One comment underneath the Guardian match report did make the non-more Guardian point that this is a very environmentally unfriendly way to protest, and that they really have to hire two aeroplane flights. Think of the carbon emissions.
I have to say, they're not wrong.
They're not wrong.
I did see, actually, I think it was Goal website, interviewed the bloke who...
Hires the planes
out. He's also the pilot. And it seems to be quite a dangerous thing to do, particularly flying over a football stadium is quite at, you know, a low altitude is quite dangerous.
Right.
And he said there was very, very, very strong headwinds, which made it even more dangerous. And you would think anyone who can fly a plane would be perfectly able to do this, but apparently it's quite a specialist skill, and there's only two or three pilots in the UK who are
licensed, capable enough to do it. Banners.
That's nonsense, really.
Well, that's what I thought, but it seems to be the case. I know nothing about aviation or flying planes. I have been up in one of those little Red Bull planes once, looping the loop and whatnot.
Oh, did you? How was that?
It was terrifying.
Right. Thanks for bringing that up, but I can't believe that pilot's...
You're dragging a
suggestion
very, very
that he's one of only
thing.
Two or three people. Oh, I suppose the dragging might.
Yeah,
might. Yeah,
and
that's
then,
fair.
You know,
so maybe that's the issue, actually dragging the banner as opposed to flying over a stadium.
Maybe there's some kind of zephyr coming out of football stadiums with all those people there. I don't know. I'm not a scientist.
It must affect the aerodynamics of the plane, though, when you're dragging something.
Right.
I mean, it must.
Presumably,
there's a possibility that banner or the cables attaching it to the plane can get tangled in
there's pylons.
That wouldn't be good, but I take it back. I'm sorry, Barry.
Albatross.
Dick Dastardly type may just have been bigging himself up to make him sound more impressive than he actually is.
Of course, in the Balkans, they use drones for this kind of thing. But it turned out to be all irrelevant because Arsene's already made his mind up. The only thing is we don't know whether the cat... In Arsene's career box is alive or dead.
Or do we?
Do we?
Tony Pulis said...
Oh, what did Tony Pulis say?
He's spoken to Arsene and Arsene says he's staying.
Well, that's what everybody else seems to think.
And a number of very
well-connected
reporters say the same.
I believe Tony Pulis said that jokingly, except in most places where it has been reported. It was not reported that Tony Pulis burst out laughing after he said it.
Well, to be fair, if Tony Pulis knew that Arsene Wenger was staying at Arsenal, he might just start burst out laughing anyway. Prospect of more visits.
Tony Pulis laugh is a beautiful thing as well. So
I don't particularly care whether Arsene Wenger stays or goes.
You?
But no, but I'd quite like him to stay.
Like him to stay.
Wow. But his players gave every indication on Saturday that they no longer want to play for him. They were awful.
Michael, you don't want him to stay?
No, I'm just wondering why Barry wants him to stay. I don't have strong feelings about this matter.
He's like a popular character of an ongoing soap opera. I mean, he's like Mrs. Mangle in Neighbours.
My feelings about the Arsenal saga, which I roll out every time this happens, hey, team full of world-class players, qualify for the Champions League 329 years in a row, won lots of silverware, okay, haven't won any for 10 years, but for goodness sake... Will no one think of the poor 88 clubs, or not 88 clubs below you this time, only 86 clubs below you this time? It's hardly, you know, starving for fodder, is it, among the Arsenal fans, really?
No, but staying would annoy so many of them.
His staying would infuriate Piers Morgan, which is the single best reason for Wenger to stay.
Right, let's never mention that name on this pod again.
You're never going to get away with this pod without mentioning Wenger again.
No, not... Michael. By the way, where are you going?
I'm going to lie on the sofa and watch sport.
Are you?
I'm going to go freelance because it's a really great market for freelance writers at the moment. There's a lot of great publications paying lots of money.
Right.
And it just seems the ideal opportunity to take advantage of them all. I've got a couple of book ideas. I want to write. Really, I've had enough of managing things, James. I've been a manager one way or another for 24 years and I just want to not manage things.
Right, okay.
So you're the exact opposite of Arsene Wenger.
Now, that was Arsenal's trip to West Brom. And well done, West Brom. And Chelsea went to Stoke, but they got a 2-1 win. Ashley Connick tweets, an actual thing that just happened. Tim Sherwood said, would Steve Bruce do a worse job than Conte's doing? Richard Keys responded, fair question. I presume this was on beIN Sports out in Doha or wherever. Many thanks to Ashley Connick for flagging that one up.
How are we supposed to follow that?
Let the record show that I like Steve Bruce a lot, and I think he's a very good football manager. Mm. But going into a dressing room like that, a graveyard of so many managers, I think you need to carry a certain international authority in order to, you know, win it over. And I love Steve Bruce. I'm not sure he'd make it out the first couple of months.
A more interesting question would be, would Steve Bruce do a better job than Pep Guardiola?
Oh, that is a good one. And what's the answer, Michael Hann?
I don't know, but I'd like Man City to try it next season for 1 year, just to see.
Why not?
Because, Guardiola's reputation has been based on extremely dominant teams and in leagues where they basically roll everyone else over. I mean, with other strong teams. I'm not trying to introduce the Spanish or German leagues in any way. But it has not been, I suspect, what Pep expected or what Man City expected this year, has it?
Mm. No, far from it. Far from it.
I mean, the other side of the coin with the Tim Sherwood question is how would the likes of Antonio Conte or Jurgen Klopp get on at, you know, a struggling championship side?
I think Conte do pretty well wherever.
I think Conte and Klopp would be fine. But I think there's a very fair argument that managing top European teams is an entirely different profession to managing, you know, the likes of sort of Wigan or Wolves or something like that. And I think Pep Guardiola would be all at sea.
Conte's
at that
done
level.
That, by the way. I mean, he's managing
exactly.
Serie B. He's
Conte's done that, and Klopp's done that, and Mourinho's done that.
But do you think there's a certain element of self-perpetuation there? First, amongst the managers at the elite clubs, because it keeps those jobs for them. And secondly, among the elite clubs, because it preserves the notion that they are somehow special and have a greater status and a greater importance than everything else. Because it's only a recent thing, really, that we've had that across the whole of Europe. I know there have always been elite managers and elite clubs, but this conception that there are four or five clubs in each league that can only be managed by four or five people.
It's
fairly new.
Yeah, no, but you're absolutely right. It does seem to exist in the Premier League. In Italy, curiously enough, you often get a chance for one of the little guys, and it doesn't always work out well. But there's a great example of somebody who has made the step up in Stefano Pioli, who's doing wonders at Inter right now. It really turned them into the team that you'd have thought they should be.
And the interesting is at the top of the English league, Conte is a manager who worked his way up, and Mauricio Pochettino is a man who has also done his working his way up. So there is proof that you don't need to be, or you have to come from somewhere to become part of the Super
League
in the
foreign,
first place.
They're both foreign, though,
Michael. Are the rules different for foreign?
I think they are. I think Steve Bruce doesn't enjoy the same continental cachet.
Although, to be fair, Mauricio Pochettino, I mean, your foreign manager is generally a man in a good suit with good shoes, and Mauricio Pochettino is a man who favours the tracksuit and the trainers. Loftus Road a couple of years ago, he was stood right in front of us, because I sit in the front row by the away manager's dugouts, and good God, that man, the combination of his sportswear and the size of his backside, I couldn't see the goal at the loft end most of the game. It was truly a total eclipse of the arse.
Really?
Yeah.
Almost what you could call that West Brom game. Just getting us back to this weekend. So anyway, Chelsea got their win. Late on, Gary Cahill, who'd given away the penalty which led to Stoke's goal, then found the winner late on. So they maintained their lead at the top, is that right?
They extended it briefly until Tottenham.
Oh, and then Tottenham, they beat Southampton narrowly, but without Harry Kane, a win is a win. 2-1 also for them. And then Man United... Barry, that game you were eager to tell us all about, a 3-1 win at the Riverside.
It was a very unimpressive win from Manchester United. I mean, the third goal, they went 2-0 up. Middlesbrough brought on Rudy Stead, at which point Jose Mourinho decided five defenders wasn't enough and brought on a sixth. And Stead scored anyway. Mm. And United were kind of hanging on until the very end when... Victor Valdez had his rather embarrassing slip, which led to the third goal, which sort of lent the scoreline an air of respectability that perhaps did Manchester United, perhaps flattered them.
Right, they were without Ibrahimovic, who was serving, I think, the last game of his ban, is that right? But they did have Fellaini. Mourinho didn't look too impressed by the whole thing. Perhaps he'll be happier with the draw, which happened on Friday, and I think we can discuss now, if you'd like, the draw for the Europa League. They've got a nice soft tie, I would suggest. Anderlecht, yeah. Who are on top of the Belgian Jupiler League. But, yeah, they haven't looked particularly stunning in the competition thus far. So, plus Zlatan, when he last met with Anderlecht, that was in the 13-14 season, he scored 5 goals past them.
Nice. Hmm. But we always talk about Chelsea's transformative thrashing at the hands of Arsenal this season. But Manchester United haven't been beaten in the league since they themselves were thrashed by Chelsea, which is a run, I think, of 18 games.
18 games.
The run that, as Chelsea have put it, has taken them all the way from 6th to 6th.
Well, they are now 5th.
They are now 5th,
up to 5th now with games in hand.
I mean, so granted, give us the situation there with the top four.
Well, you've got Liverpool in 4th with 56 points.
Yep.
4 points back, but with 2 games in hand, a Manchester United, albeit games in hand that Mourinho probably doesn't want.
Right.
2 points back from United in 6th are Arsenal, again with 2 games in hand on Liverpool. And then in 7th, creeping up the table, even though
without actually
them.
Moving.
All right, creeping closer?
Yep.
Without actually... No, none of that.
Looming.
Lurking. Ominously, yeah. Are Everton.
Right.
Level on points with Arsenal now. They have played 2 games more.
Right.
But they do still have to play Arsenal yet. They also have to play Manchester United, and they also have to play Liverpool.
So home or away?
Can't remember off the top of my head. I suspect away.
Right.
But right now, with Liverpool, you know, limping towards the end of the season, Manchester United with loads of games and lots of selection problems, Arsenal in freefall,
yeah,
and Everton. They've been knocked out of both domestic cups in the first at the first hurdle.
Mm.
They're fresh, they're focused, they've got nothing to lose.
They've got Lukaku. They've got Lukaku to lose.
Who's not apparently affected by being in the newspapers all week over the wanting to leave thing. I'm not saying they will do it, but they could do it.
Right. Flawless, Ian. Merseyside derby, I understand, is at Anfield. Barry.
After that Merseyside derby, Liverpool... their running is kind of interesting. Bournemouth, Stoke, West Brom, Palace, Watford, Southampton, West Ham, Borough. So
exactly the kind of team
that they can't beat, or that they have tended to struggle against.
It's interesting. All right. Well, anyway, Everton's win this weekend came with another 2 goals from Romelu Lukaku. Hull, 3 points from safety. That relegation battle looking interesting. Sunderland had a 0-0 draw with Burnley. They're still 7 points from safety. Ellis Short hovering in the director's box. What's that, Ian?
Mrs. Short did not enjoy the fare on offer.
Did
on
she
Saturday.
Fall asleep?
Mrs. Short
great.
May well have fallen asleep during Sunderland Burnley, for which she is entirely blameless.
She's sort of human.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, you say the relegation battle is interesting. Yeah.
Did I say that?
Yeah. I was just looking this time last season, after this number of games, the 3 clubs who were in the bottom 3 went down, and I suspect the same thing's going to happen now this season.
Sunderland, Hull and Borough.
I don't know so much, because Swansea, who I thought were out of it and absolutely flying under Paul Clement, lost. And they didn't just lose to Bournemouth, they were really flat. There was nothing really there. I've seen them play very well since he's come in. I think they've won 5 since he was appointed. But this was more worrying than Hull. I was up at Hull last week for their defeat, and it was just one of those things, bit of dodgy defending, bit of bad finishing. But they were flat for 90 minutes.
But that said, if you look at the game Swansea got coming up, they've got Middlesbrough at home in the last one. We fancy them to get 3. Tottenham at home, yeah, they'll probably lose that one or maybe get a draw. West Ham away, where they've got a decent chance of getting points. I think the more interesting upcoming fixtures are a few points above, where some of the teams who look like they're safe, it seems around 33 points, like Bournemouth, could suddenly find themselves in a bit of trouble. They've got Southampton away,
Watford,
Liverpool away and Chelsea at home. You know, they could get no points out of those. And teams below them, a lot of them have got Sunderland within the next 3 games. Right. So they're all going to get 3
looking
points.
Looking at the table, with Hull on 24 points, let's say they win 4 out of their last 9 games, which I think is a bit of a stretch, but these things can happen. I think we're looking at 36 points being the marker. You probably expect Southampton, Bournemouth, West Ham and Burnley to pick up another win.
What with Hull, for example? I think they're going to get six out of their next three because they've got West Ham at home and they've got Middlesbrough at home before they go to City away. So suddenly that transforms the situation with still several games to go. It alters the balance.
It's a lot brighter. Middlesbrough also had a period with two strikers on the pitch, something they haven't done all season. Two strikers on the pitch and they look good.
Here's something else. What about Watford?
Well,
they got beaten by Crystal Palace, who now had three wins and three clean sheets in a row.
And not only did they get beaten, Palace won that game with their only shot on target, which was by Troy Deeney.
Yeah, so they actually had a win with no shots on target.
It's pure Allardyce.
Brilliant. Brilliant. And Mamadou Sakho looking good?
Yes, very much so.
But do Watford fit into that category of teams that could?
People who've watched them more than me have been saying Watford could go down. They're in that awkward place now. This stage of the season, you want games against teams somewhere between 8th and 14th because there's always the suspicion the players have clocked off. I mean, they've got 31. Again, they've got 10 games left. They should really win two of them and draw one of them.
Right.
They should be all right.
All right. Leicester look okay, though, don't they? Another win. They win so much, they're probably sick of winning.
4 from 4 under Shakespeare. But this one, West Ham very kindly gave Leicester a 2-goal head start inside 7 minutes. But they really should have got back into it. And it's only by virtue of the trademark Schmeichel starfish save that Leicester were able to hang on. Yeah. He's in the form of his life right now. And he's probably the one Leicester player over the course of the season whose performances didn't dramatically tail off. He's certainly been their player of the season thus far. But the work isn't done. They're only on 30 points.
OK, but they're 6 clear of the drop. And you have to look at their form. I mean, I'm not sure where they are on the form table.
Well, actually, over the last 3 games, Leicester's form is exactly as good as Crystal Palace's.
Yes.
And as good as Chelsea's and Spurs.
Bingo. And they're not threatened by relegation.
Not yet, but you never know.
Never know.
However, I do believe we can probably say goodbye to Sunderland now. I think they're a team with another couple of wins in them, but that won't even take them out of the drop zone.
OK. What, though, will the ongoing adventures in the Champions League mean for Leicester's survival chances in the Premier League? We'll talk about their draw after this. European draw time. Yes, it happened last Friday. But it was exciting, no? The quarterfinals. Anyway, Ben says, can we do this quickly? Well, we've already done Anderlecht Man United out of that Europa League. Lyon and Besiktas, perhaps the other key tie in that competition. Whereas in your Champions League, some meaty... Well, they're all going to be meaty draws at this stage of the competition, aren't they? But how about Bayern against Real Madrid, who they lost 5-0 against... on aggregate, last time they faced each other. Of course, Ancelotti, their manager, was managing Real Madrid back in those days. But that's going to be fun. I'm moving on, though. Unless there's any, you pitch in if you want to say anything. Which one are you most looking forward to, Michael? Because you love Champions League football.
Champions League is the highlight of my life. I'm actually looking forward to Leicester against Atletico just for the kind of preposterousness of it.
It's extraordinary, isn't it? Now, some people have said, oh, Leicester will be happy to avoid the likes of Barcelona, Bayern, Real. No, says Ian McIntosh. No. Why?
Because Leicester against Atletico, that's a bastard off. That's just a whole pitch full of bastards being bastards to each other. What they need is a kind of soft as warm cheese team of elite superstars they can get in and rough up. But you can't rough up Atletico.
Okay.
I think that may be the end of the road for them.
So they beat Sevilla, though, and they're better. Well, they lost to Atletico this weekend, but they're above Atletico in the Liga.
Yeah, but they're not the same calibre of bastards. I mean, they're bastard-y.
Right.
Bastard-ish. But they're not complete bastards.
Okay. Are they more of questionable parentage rather than fully-fledged bastards?
Yeah, they haven't been on that show, Who Do You Think You Are, yet. But they're booked in.
Right. Here's another stat. Atletico have never lost to an English side in Europe. Or, I'm guessing, anywhere, because where else would they face an English side? They never lost to an English side.
One bad night in the Simod Cup aside, it's a flawless record.
I've forgotten that one, actually. The other Champions League draws, I mentioned Bayern, Real Madrid, Atletico taking on Leicester, Juventus up against Barcelona, rematch of the final from 2 years ago. The Italian press very big on Juve's chances for revenge because they've completely kind of refreshed their side since then. Barcelona arguably looking a little bit shaky, only just squeaked past with some questionable calls maybe against PSG. Against that, Juve have yet to be tested by a proper opponent this term in the Champions League. And, of course, Messi, who notched up another brace this weekend. So that's now 41 goals in 40 games. It's the eighth consecutive season he scored more than 40 goals. Never been seen before.
That's why they call him the Bob Latchford of the modern era.
And the other fixture, which we'll all be tuned into, is Dortmund-Monaco. Mm. Wow.
That'll be fun.
That's going to be crazy. And just to flag up that Monaco were at it again this weekend. They went to Caen, 3-0 win. Who got a brace?
Mbappé.
Kylian Mbappé, still only 18. His numbers, Ian? Grab his piece of paper. He's got 980 minutes, 12 goals, 5 assists. He's directly involved in a goal every 56.65 minutes.
That's ridiculous.
Isn't it, though?
Just with regard to Dortmund, there's reports in Bild today, and I know it's not the most reputable newspaper in the world, but their lead story on their sports section this morning was saying that Thomas Tuchel had been approached by Arsenal.
Really?
Which Arsenal are furiously denying.
To fly a plane, or...?
But apparently it's very difficult.
Yeah. Right. Oh, yeah. Well, that's interesting. That puts everything in perspective.
Well, Ian just said Arsenal have strenuously denied it, so it can't possibly be true.
Yeah, publicly. But they are certainly putting the word out this is not a thing that's happened, which kind of suggests that Wenger may have unveiled his plans for next season.
All right,
and they're trying to move. I mean, it wouldn't be beyond the realms of possibility that Arsenal have been gently sounding people out.
Well, I think that has possibly been happening. Yeah,
yeah, and Thomas Tuchel is certainly one of the people I'd look to sound out, even though Dortmund have had a bit of an off season.
Mm.
Can I not call him Tuchel?
You can if you like.
The comments section's going to be messy.
He's been called worse.
Yeah.
Do you not think... Is he not a bit too Wengerish to replace Wenger, though?
Who, Thomas Tuchel?
Yeah.
I wouldn't say that.
Why would he be Wengerish?
Okay. Yeah. I think Arsenal need a, while the word was being bandied about, a bastard.
A Diego Simeone. Yeah, that'd be fantastic, wouldn't it?
Someone who'll just make the players cry.
Steve Bruce, his name's come up. He's available. Is he available?
He's not really available. But
where is he?
I think he'd make himself available. He's at Villa.
Then of course he is.
He's just pulled hard on the joystick.
He may soon be available, to be fair. Because things have been going very well.
Things have been a lot better.
We'll talk about the Championship very, very shortly, imminently, I might say. Just to flag up that Dortmund, home of Thomas Tuchel at present, will be hosting the Germany-England game in this exciting international break, which is now looming. We'll talk about that on Thursday and all that international stuff. There's lots of other bits that we could mention. But we'll do that after we do Championship, and that is after this. Really tragic news from Ireland. Derry City, the captain, a 27-year-old Ryan McBride, dying this weekend. Awful story, that.
Yeah, he's a local lad, Derry through and through, grew up literally living in the shadow of the Brandywell, and they had a game on Saturday, I think. They've won 3 out of 4 in the League of Ireland so far this season, and he was feeling unwell, so he went up to bed for a lie down, and his dad went to see how he was later on that evening, and he was dead. Shocking news. For a club that has had more than its fair share of tragedy in recent times. Last year they had a striker, Mark Farn, who had a brain tumour and died as a result of that. And last year also, a year ago to the day, I think today, there was the Buncrana Pier tragedy where a car with, I think it was 6 people in it, slipped off a pier into the sea and 5 of the people in the car died. And Derry player Josh Daniels, he lost his mother, sister, brother-in-law and 2 nephews in that particular accident. So, yeah, Derry are having more than their fair share of bad luck at the moment. So, commiserations to them and the family of Ryan McBride, obviously, who seems to have been a very, very popular guy and he's been at Derry all his career and seem to be very well respected and liked.
Mm, as you say, our condolences. Elsewhere, Scotland, Celtic now 1 game away from the title with Brendan Rodgers.
Yeah, they can win. They will win the title if they win their next game against Hearts on Saturday week, but they could actually win it before that if Aberdeen lose against Dundee the previous night. So, yeah, they'll win it with 8 or 9 games to spare, probably.
Right.
And Ian Cathro's, you know, the Mr. Laptop, mm-hmm. who's in charge of Hearts, he's getting pelters at the moment because he hasn't had a very good time of it since taking over. Played 17, won 4, lost 8. And during their defeat to Aberdeen over the weekend, he was Craig Levine, who's sort of the director of football at Hearts, was, you know, shuttling messages up and down the stand stairs to Cathro and didn't seem to be too pleased with what he was seeing on the pitch. Mm. So his days could be numbered.
Oh dear. Honest Holt Ender wants us to salute York City and their achievement of knocking Lincoln out of the FA Trophy final. Well, they were in the semi-final, of course. So Lincoln not going to Wembley. And Justin Kluivert scored his first Eredivisie goal 10 years and one day after his dad scored his last.
And he's now going to go out to bars for the next 4 years.
Harsh. Let's turn to the Championship. Michael, would you like that?
Everyone likes to hear about the Championship, James.
Great. Hey, look, it's only Nick Miller who's
Hello, everyone.
Up.
Hello.
Hey.
Hi. Hello. Hello.
Hi. It's almost like we don't trust you to do the Championship on your own. Also, Nick, you went to Leeds-Brighton, which was the key game this weekend. Why? Why was it so important?
Well, probably the key game. Brighton lost 2-0 to Leeds. Chris Wood scored 2 goals. He's gloriously sort of solid man, Chris Wood is. He scored 24 of Leeds' 52 goals this season. So I think only Jermaine Defoe in the top sort of 4 leagues has scored a bigger proportion of his team's goals than Chris Wood. Brighton were quite sort of flat, and they could have done with winning because Newcastle drew. Newcastle and Brighton still probably going to get the 2 automatic places, but...
All right. Newcastle still a point clear then. They drew 0-0 at Birmingham. You called Newcastle the best team you'd ever seen at this level, Michael.
Yeah, early this season when they won 6-0 at Loftus Road. QPR weren't good, but Newcastle were immense. You know, Jonjo Shelvey looked absolutely brilliant, as well as looking just like Sal Solo out of Classics Nouveau.
Oh, yeah. Is it a dream?
But both Newcastle and Brighton seem to have spent the last couple of months desperately trying not to impose their will on the Championship, and it just baffles me why they haven't been able to continue the form that they had showed. Brighton murdered QPR when we went to, I was going to say the Goldstone Ground there, there's my age, I went to the Amex earlier this season, and I thought those two were absolutely streets ahead. I mean, I still think, like Nick, that they're both going to get the automatic promotion places, but they are making heavy weather of it.
On the subject of Classics Nouveau, do you ever feel that, you know, that they got the short end of they and Depeche Mode both came out at the same time, both with fancy-sounding French names, and Depeche Mode had gone on to become an international institution while, you know, leather-trousered Sal Solo is consigned very much to the Where Are They Now file?
I think people very much foresaw that in years to come there would be a midfielder called Jonjo Shelvey who many people think will underachieve, and that became a metaphor for Classics Nouveau's career in advance through the miracles of pop and football and time travel simultaneously.
Boom. All right. Just good to get that cleared up. Are Brighton going to be all right when they go up?
Well, it almost seems pointless talking about Brighton after this discussion. I don't know.
Do you remember Classics Nouveau?
No, not at all.
That's my point.
No. Depeche Mode, yes.
Yeah, yes. For everybody, Depeche Mode. What about Classics Nouveau?
No, nothing.
Bands with French names. Anyway, Brighton in the Championship. In the Premier League.
Just back on Depeche Mode.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Richard Spencer, he said that Depeche Mode was sort of his favourite band and the kind of band for the American alt-right, and Depeche Mode very quickly said, no, we're not, son. So,
Dave Garn responded by describing Richard Spencer using a four-letter word that begins with C.
Oh.
In finest Essex.
Mm. Brilliant. Well done to, you know, the Mode.
So, yeah, they deserve their success.
Yeah. Do you remember when Reagan said that Born in the USA was his favourite album?
Oof.
Yeah.
That's got to hurt.
Yeah.
Didn't Richard Spencer come out recently and say he liked some song or other and the guy whose granddad had wrote the song pointed out that he was a gay Jew?
Mm.
So.
Yeah. In your face. as it were, which, you know, not for the first time with Richard Spence.
While we're on the subject of politics,
oh, yeah.
Everyone in the sports desk got very excited last week. I was manacled to the racing desk for the week, helping with the coverage of the Cheltenham Festival. And Guardian and Observer heavyweight big boy journalist Nick Cohen came running in excitedly looking for me. Ooh. And everyone's sort of going, what could he possibly want with Barry? But he was very excited because he said that in his opinion, the best American politics podcast is Nerdcast. Obviously, none of us are familiar with it. But they had been singing our praises.
Really?
Yeah. Each of the contributors was asked to talk about their favourite other podcast that they're not on. And one of them said Guardian Football Weekly. So
they all laugh?
I don't have a clue what they're on about half the time, but I really like it.
Right. Well, we share that. That's tremendous news. And hello to you, whoever it is.
Yes.
From whichever podcast it was.
Nerdcast. I'm pretty sure it's Nerdcast.
I wonder if they'll be running into each other going, they mentioned us on Football.
But everyone in sports was really jealous that Nick Cohen gave me the time of day.
Boom. Listeners love it when we talk politics. But Nick, I must insist that we return to the Championship. Where did we get to? Oh, yeah, Brighton. They're going to be all right in the Premier League?
In the Premier League?
Mm.
Yes, I think they are.
All right. And Newcastle?
Are you sure they're going to get into the Premier League?
Yeah. They're 5 points clear.
Six points clear of Huddersfield, who are in third.
Yeah. Mm. Both. I don't know. You think they're going to bottle it again?
I watched them against Derby and they were magnificent. And then against Leeds, kind of fell Leeds short. Game. And they look like they're wobbling.
Yeah, this is the first time,
Brighton.
Mm. Newcastle and Brighton, every sort of few weeks you think, okay, right, they've got it cracked, they've got it sussed, and then they go on some kind of little wobbly run. But I think both of those two are going to be...
Huddersfield have a game in hand on them as well.
Yes, yeah.
Huddersfield currently in the playoff spots along with the Leeds, Reading and Sheffield Wednesday, and Fulham. How about that? They're only a point off that quartet. Who is your money on, Nick? And you, Michael?
For the playoffs?
Yeah.
I quite like Fulham to end up in the playoffs.
Would you?
I have a soft spot for Fulham, despite them being local rivals. But it's that whole thing of like Chelsea not caring about QPR and QPR actually feeling quite pleasant towards Fulham, whereas Fulham hate us.
Oh, really?
Are they
Belgium to your France?
I'm not sure they'd see it that way. I think Leeds are the team for the playoffs. I think the run of form has been very impressive recently.
Right.
Although they were shackled by Queen's Park Rangers,
like
not this weekend gone, but
is.
The weekend before. But I think they probably have the most about them for the playoffs, to be honest. I think Brighton are going to come back down, to be honest, first
really?
Season. I think Newcastle will stay up. Newcastle will also spend money one way or another.
Uh-huh.
I don't think Brighton will. I think Brighton aren't strong enough.
Ooh. And what about Huddersfield then? I mean, they're in that mix for the playoffs.
They're in that mix, but I think Leeds are the team with the momentum at the moment.
Mm.
Well, that said, we're still eight games to go before we even get to the playoffs, and who knows what could change in terms of momentum.
I felt quite good about Fulham until this weekend when they contrived to lose at home to Wolverhampton Wanderers.
Cool.
But yeah, I think Leeds. There's something about Leeds. I was up there last week, and the mood seems really kind of calm and cool, which is in. All part of Gary Monk's managerial attributes. He's very, very sort of well-grounded, sensible young manager. He's done very, very well up there.
I'm actually pleased that Gary Monk has been able to rebuild his reputation, because when he first started Leeds, his first game was just getting murdered at Loftus Road. I mean, we took him to pieces. And there was a lot of stuff around message boards and online saying, oh, Gary Monk's been found out, he's a joke. And I thought he didn't do a bad job at Swansea at all. I mean, things started going wrong, but he didn't do a bad job at all. And I'm actually glad to see a young manager doing a good job at a club which has been a graveyard for managers for an awful long time.
Yeah. I think Leeds will go up too. The two things, obviously, if Chris Wood gets injured. The other thing is that their two best players are Wood and central defender called Pontus Janssen.
Oh, what a player.
Who
is
an incredible player. But he was left out on Saturday, and Monk was very kind of cagey about why. So if there's been some kind of strange falling out there, then that might be a concern.
Mm.
He's Premier League class. He'd head away a meteorite if it came in a penalty area. Mm. Have Leeds actually got him yet? Because they had him on loan.
He's on loan with sort of fee agreed, I think.
Ah.
But the big question is, how would he deal with a meteorite on the ground? Because he'll face more of that in the Premier League.
Well, that's not really a specialist area. Mm. So, yeah. He would have to adapt.
Okay.
Elsewhere in the Championship?
Should talk about is what we flagged up last weekend as the fifth consecutive match between Forest and Derby with a new set of managers, so new managers on both benches. Is that right?
That's right, yeah.
Just incredible.
Also, game at City Ground was on Saturday. The previous game between the two teams at City Ground was in November 2015, and the two clubs have changed managers 8 times between them.
Stop.
In that time.
Wow. Sort of
caretakers and full time, but it's pretty impressive. It's like they're competing to be the most sort of stupid and chaotic club in that region. But obviously, Derby are kind of they probably won't get in there. They're probably a little bit too far away from the playoffs, so they're just kind of coasting to the end of the season. Forest are a point above the relegation zone. And,
right. I don't think the managers were confirmed, both of them, last time we spoke, but it is Mark Warburton now at Forest and Gary Rowett at Derby.
Yeah. Well, one of the measures of how disillusioned Nottingham Forest fans are is that for the Derby game against Derby, they didn't fill the ground. Derby filled the away section, but the total crowd at the City Ground was only 26,000, which I think for a game like that, with the rivalry between those two teams, is sad.
And it's been like that for a lot of the season at Forest.
It's just for this game, think they've managed to fill it.
It's apathy as much as it. I've never known as much apathy with Forest fans as I have in the last sort of 18 months or so.
Do you think these two appointments could lead to better times, or is the problem above them?
Oh, well, the problem is definitely above them at both clubs. Rowett, I think, will be very good at Derby if Mel Morris, kind of the Derby chairman, who a millionaire who made his money from the popular computer game Candy Crush.
Oh, really?
Mm. If he sort of sticks with him for a little bit, then I think Rowett will be quite good at Derby, and who knows what will happen at Forest. I think Mark Warburton will also be quite good there, but, you know, Forest have had some quite good managers in the last 4 years and 4 or 5 years, and they haven't been allowed to do anything.
Right. And the sale of the club's still stalled.
Well, sale, maybe not. There is a reappearance by the owner of Olympiacos, who tried to take over the club last summer and was stopped by the pesky detail of him being investigated on criminal charges. But he's back on the scene, could be investing in the club. There was a takeover that fell through a couple of months ago. And if it had gone through, Gary Rowett would probably be Forest manager now. But as it is, he said, no chance. I'm not going near that one.
Well, the two sides drew 2-2.
So if your legacy is Candy Crush, why would you be bothered trying to win, you know, leagues or European Cups?
It's a fair question, like actually.
Are you suggesting that once you've won Candy Crush, you've won everything?
No, once you began Candy Crush.
No, if that's the legacy you're going to leave behind, how are you going
to
top it?
I'll be eager to add something else to my portfolio.
Would you?
Yeah.
I've never played Candy Crush. Is it nice?
I haven't either. Is anyone?
It's quite addictive. But I wouldn't say, if I'd invented Candy Crush, I think maybe I'd want, if I had the ambition and the money, I'd perhaps want something else on my CV as well.
Okay.
Surely that's exactly, if you make your money in a game like Candy Crush, sort of ploughing all your money into your football team is exactly the sort of thing, you stupid thing you do. What would you, if you'd made, so let's say, Barry, tomorrow you invent a computer game and you make £100 million from it, what do you do with the money?
I think I'd squander my money on racehorses rather than football.
Right.
But actually, speaking of which, Tony Bloom, the owner of Brighton, he had a winner at Cheltenham last week.
Yeah. Okay.
Big price too, about 25-1 or more.
Right. At the risk of getting back on topic, Michael, it's been ages since we talked about your QPR. They probably moved into the new stadium by now, have they?
New stadium and the new training ground. Team full of Italian and Spanish internationals.
Brilliant.
Yeah. All right. We're in the Champions League, coming up in the quarterfinals, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right.
No, it's actually going quite well at QPR at the moment. After a very difficult start for Ian Holloway, where he'd lost 6 games in the row, QPR have now turned into Europe's form team. what he was doing during those six games wasn't just losing, but actually getting the team used to playing in different formations, different styles. And the team at this point, QPR, are now actually capable of playing in all those styles and formations and are doing really well. The big thing, I think, has been the reinvention of Grant Hall from a cultured for the Championship centre-back into someone who plays in midfield when QPR are going forward and plays in defence in a back three of central defenders when QPR are defending. And it's made a huge difference all across the pitch. The attack looks sharp. QPR just look good at the moment. And Ian Holloway, the great relief for QPR fans is that a returning hero has come back to the club and is actually doing well.
Hmm.
It would have been heartbreaking if he'd continued.
Were people starting to lose patience with him?
Well, no, because he had a lot of goodwill. But after six losses in a row, there was a certain amount of twitchiness, it has to be said. But there'd been some really good performances. 0-0 at Leeds was, by all accounts, the best performance of the season. 4-1 away at Birmingham. Admittedly, Birmingham, a club who would struggle to win a raffle with the correct numbers on the ticket at the moment, but nevertheless, a good QPR performance. On Saturday, QPR beat Rotherham 5-1.
Ooh.
But I've got to say, QPR didn't have to play well. I actually felt sorry for the Rotherham players, which I rarely do watching football.
They're bottom of the table, aren't they?
Yeah, they look like a bunch of players who know they're not good enough for this division and are sick of not being good enough for this division. I mean, just the defence was just terrible.
Mm.
Luke Freeman's second goal for QPR. First, he burst through two midfielders where he shouldn't have got the ball. Then he burst through two centre-backs when he shouldn't have got the ball from any of them. And it's just these players, they've not just switched off, they've lost the will to live.
You've seen that before, haven't you?
I've seen that with QPR players more often, to be honest.
Yeah. Okay, producer Ben's got some stats about Rotherham. Hang on, everyone. It's here somewhere. What's this bit here? Don't mention politics, okay? A tick. it's not that one. Ah, right, okay. But that was their 12th straight away defeat for the Millers.
Mm. They've conceded 87 goals already this season. They're on course
That's
to concede
a good stat,
100.
Isn't it? They're 24 points off safety. And they've only got 24 points left to play for. 24 points off safety.
It's still on.
Do you know what their goal difference is? So you're saying there's a chance. Do you know what their goal difference is?
No.
Minus 54.
Oof. Hats off to the Rotherham travelling support, though.
Yeah.
They're still going to games.
There are about 150 of them.
150.
I would say.
From Rotherham to London for 1 point all season.
All right. Producer Ben's back. He mentions Paul Warne, the boss, the manager, who says, "My overriding emotion is of embarrassment. I'm clapping our fans at the end, and most of them were pretty courteous to me. If they were throwing stuff at me, I'd understand why."
I felt a bit sorry for Paul Warne because a few people near us were shouting Guardiola at him because he does look a bit like Guardiola.
Is that an insult?
No, but it's more the contrast between what he's got at his disposal and what Guardiola has at his disposal.
Fans can be.
Well, it's West London subtlety, you see, James.
All right.
It's not just going, "You effing."
Hmm.
It's more Guardiola.
Kind of, Rotherham also sort of emphasises, as unpleasant as this may be, how good Neil Warnock is in the Championship.
Yeah.
He kept them up handily last season when they looked doomed, and now he's doing, well, great things might be an exaggeration. But
one point higher than QPR with Cardiff City.
Well, there you go. Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm Team Warnock over here. He's never managed my club.
I'll tell you,
but
once Warnock does manage your club, you stop hating him.
Oh, you stop hating him?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
He's a really nice guy.
He's a really personable chap.
I've interviewed him a couple of times.
Oh, Barry, you've of course spent time with him, haven't you?
Yeah. A lot of time for him.
I had lunch with his son.
Bingo.
Yeah, he's quite nice too.
Why did you have lunch with his son?
He's an agent.
Oh, okay.
Oh, not William the small boy then.
Not that. No. That would just be weird.
Was it a business lunch?
It was. It was a long time ago now.
Okay. All right then. We seem to have run out of time cruelly for this Football Weekly. What?
Could I just say one thing that I thought I'd never say as a Southend fan?
Mm.
And that's good luck to Leighton Orient today, who are in court on their winding up order.
Oh.
They've been rattling tins for some time and getting money in for a fighting fund. Not being particularly well versed in how these sort of things work, I only hope that things go well and they stay in existence so we have a chance to beat them again in the future.
We've got breaking news for you. They've been given till the 12th of June to do something, but producer Ben didn't tell me what. But anyway, that's a...
Okay, that sounds encouraging.
To clear their debts.
Oh.
Right, rather than...
I don't know if that's encouraging or not, given the scale of their debts.
Right.
But can only reaffirm my best
wishes. Well done for mentioning that, and best of luck to them. Michael, thank you so much for being with us, not just today, but through the years. And I can only hope that you'll find time to leave your sofa and come and join us in the future,
you know,
in a freelance
role. You can always call me or email me and I'll rush in unless there's something
good
on
telly. I'll be honest, Michael, I think that was one of those showbiz invitations that isn't really genuine.
How do you know that my response wasn't one of those showbiz acceptances
Fair
that
point.
Isn't really genuine?
Fair point. Well, anyway, best of luck till we speak
Thank
again.
Thank you.
Not at all. Keep the Classics Nouveau flame a-burning. Their time will come again. Barry, thanks very much for returning to us today. And Nick, for that little cameo appearance.
Ben just keeps me in the cupboard and brings me out.
Super.
Every now and then.
Inappropriate clothing too. Lovely. Excellent. Thanks, listeners. We'll be back on Thursday. And you know you don't want to miss that one because it's all about internationals and stuff. Bye for now.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.